what is the story they're telling themselves about themselves? And how can we rewrite portions of that story to change it? And ultimately, you know, it will look different.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. To Motivation to Write. Thank you for joining me. I'm happy you're here. Today I have holistic life and wellness coach Caitlin Peach, and I'm very excited for you to hear this conversation. So let's learn a little bit more about Caitlin Peach. Caitlin Peach is a holistic life and wellness coach, certified Reiki healer, self-love advocate, and the heart behind the Living Peach Fully brand. Her life's work is to help guide women to a place of self-love through holistic and tangible methods. For the first 25 years of her life, she was the ultimate people pleaser. She lived her life for others and put herself last, and kept thinking that by sacrificing her personal happiness and health for others, she would eventually be happy. Surprisingly, she was wrong. Instead, she found herself at rock bottom and unable to answer this simple question: who am I? That is when the magic of self-love came into her life, and she's been on the journey ever since. It's guided her through the most powerful part of her life so far. And over the past 6 years, she's been working on unconditionally loving herself regardless of what others think. And she's here to help us do the same. Welcome, Caitlin Peach. And I have to say, like, that last name just grabbed my attention. Is that your real last name?
So my last name is Peachin, but I've actually changed it to be Peach because growing up my nickname was Peach and I was called that more than anything else. So I kind of like adapted my own name.
Yeah, I love it. That's a wonderful last name. Well, I was wondering if you can kind of tell us a little bit about your journey, because I think you started in corporate, or are you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how'd you get from corporate to this wonderful place of holistic life and wellness coach?
Yeah. So I worked for Disney World for 10 years in their Imagineering group. So we did like creative engineering. I got to work on a couple of roller coasters, which was pretty cool.
Oh my gosh. What did you do on the roller coasters?
So the project I'm most proud of was helping build Avatar Land in Florida. And it was everything from the designing of the actual attraction to the theming of the land, and then being in the actual construction field working with people out there.
Wow, that's
from
great.
Beginning to finish, yeah. So it just was really taxing, and it was a career that required all of me. And I kind of came to this place of feeling unbalanced and almost losing sense of self to a point where I didn't even know how to get back to that. And so I started to really implement self-care in my life and start to take care of myself and nourish my body the way I knew it needed to be loved, and my mind and all the things. And through this holistic journey, it transformed my life. It transformed the lives around me, and it just showed me that it brought so much joy and excitement to my life that I was capable of doing it, that I basically shifted my whole life so that I could serve others in this way and help them find this place that I've made it to now.
Yeah. And the career that you were in, can you tell me the name of your position again? You're an engineer?
I was a project manager coordinator for the Imagineering group.
Project manager, coordinator. Are there a lot of women in that position or in that field?
No, it is. It's mostly masculine. I spent probably 70% of my time in a construction setting in the hard hat. safety boots, safety gear, all of it.
Yeah. So you're in this very kind of tough masculine space most of the time. I can just kind of feel the tension of being in that environment. So when you went the holistic route, did you already have like some background or some knowledge of that? Or did you start reading books? Did you watch documentaries? How did you kind of find your way there?
Yeah, so I self-educated through Netflix and some self-help books. I watched a Netflix documentary on the power of juicing. And so that was like my catalyst into the wellness
Which one
world.
Was it called? What was it called? Do you know? Was it the one
remember,
Fat, Sick, and Something?
Yes. I was going to say it had like an inappropriate name. It was like so
Yeah, I love aggressive. That one. Yes, yes, yes. That's a great documentary. As a matter of fact, I've been juicing consistently for about, it's been over a month, maybe even 2 months.
Woo, that's amazing.
Yes, and I feel really great. And I actually first saw that documentary years ago. I think it's been out about 10 years, I think.
Yeah, a long time.
Yeah, but that's a great documentary. So that kind of inspired me to take this route.
That's so fun. Yeah, it did the same thing for me. And I was like, okay, I mean, I'm not a big veggie girl, so I guess I'll start juicing here and there. And I just felt so freaking good. I felt so good. I had so much energy. And then little other areas just started to change. And I was inspired to go plant-based with my diet, which has morphed throughout the years. I'm no longer fully plant-based, but it kind of helped me become more familiar with my food and where it's coming from and just this new type of gratitude for what I'm consuming. But juicing was the catalyst.
Yeah. Really was. Yeah. Yeah. I think because after watching a few documentaries on Netflix, this is about 10 years ago, that was one of them, the juicing one. And then like
Forks over knives.
So I've been vegetarian for about 10 years. It's amazing how just watching one documentary can completely change your life.
Truly.
Yeah. And I just feel so much better. I don't feel as lethargic, weighed down emotionally and physically.
Yeah, it's almost like impacts you in a spiritual way too, because when you start taking care of yourself in that way, it's, you just start to attract more of that type of thing into your life.
Yeah. So tell us about how you use nourishment and body movement to help your clients. Do you use this as a means of bringing them to this discovery of self-love, or in what way do you use nourishment and movement of the body to help uplift your clients?
So I like to take a really mindful approach in both of these areas. With nourishment, I like to help women redefine what their relationship with food is like. Instead of looking at it as this caloric, scary thing in our lives, it's like getting this intimate relationship with it to where you understand what it's doing for your body, remove the guilt around food, and just kind of remind ourselves that the reason we're eating is to nourish the cells in our body, to nourish our mental, our mental health, our emotional health, and to protect ourselves. Especially with everything going on in the world right now, we need to be consuming things that are going to do that for us, to protect these beautiful shells. And so with the understanding the nourishment and kind of removing this guilt around food or shame, whatever is coming up for them, we change it to joy and gratitude. And when you shift your perspective in that way, you're actually start to crave more of the healthier things for yourself. And it's just a really powerful, it's such a powerful space to witness these women rediscover what food can do for themselves. And then I do have some nutritional education with, you know, understanding that there's not one fix for everyone. You know, we all have different upbringings. We all have different emotions attached to the sweets and the carbs. And So it's also getting deep, deep, deep into that and where that comes from and how can we rewrite these past stories so that we can enjoy our food? Because what's the point of life if you can't enjoy food, right?
Yeah, yes, of course. And I want people, like, I have been addicted to sugar since I was a kid. And I don't know at what point, probably somewhere in my 20s, I learned about emotional eating. Mm-hmm. And I was never like, you know, I wouldn't call myself an overeater. I wasn't overweight or anything like that. But I found that when I ate, when I went for the candy bar or the cookie or the whatever, it wasn't because I was hungry. It was because I had this craving. But I think beneath that craving, there was always some emotional issue. Stress, more than likely, was having me reach for the candy bar. So I just became a little bit more cognizant of why I was eating. It didn't make the craving go away, but there was this awareness, like, do I really want this, need this right now? Do you find that you come across a lot of emotional issues with food?
Oh, yes. Especially working with mostly women. It's our comfort. It's our safety. It's a reward for some people. And it's so true. I mean, we fill these emotional voids with food because it does make us feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something. It's, I don't know. And I think it's passed down too. From
Absolutely.
Like parents to, yeah, yeah. So what about the movement part? Are you talking about like exercising or what do you?
So with the movement, I like to challenge my clients to tap deep into their inner child and to kind of go back into their life before society told us what was right and wrong and how things should look in our life. Yeah. And to remember what they would do with their body, how they would play, how they would move it and feel excited in that. A lot of women used to play sports when they were younger and don't play any longer, or dance, you know, like a fool, like a crazy fool, and just play in our bodies, express with our bodies. And so I like to challenge them to find movement that brings, that reignites that within themselves, that brings back that joy, that sentiment, that playfulness, and to make it okay that that's our exercise, that that's our movement, and to kind of, again, you know, change the relationship we have to exercise.
Yeah.
A lot of us use it as a form of punishment or to get rid of what we ate or because we're supposed to do it. And a lot of the times we're not helping our bodies, we're hurting them because we're not listening to what they're actually needing in that space.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting how there can be some, I don't know if it's embarrassment to just move sometimes, to just dance. Like, it took me a long time just to be able to enjoy myself on the dance floor because I was like a ballet artist and I'll tap and I did all the traditional formal dances I took. But as far as like letting loose on that dance floor, I was like, oh God, no, that's way. And it took literally someone dragging me out on a dance floor for the first time, again, like in my 20s or maybe 18-ish. It's like, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. But even just like letting loose in the car and enjoying yourself, I'm just paranoid, like, who's watching me? Who's watching me? Right? But I mean, they were probably, the people who are watching you are probably wishing they had as much like gutso as you do to kind of just let loose and.
Exactly. And for all you know, you inspired them to do it on their own. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think movement is just so important. It is. I'm a teacher. And so sometimes I'm just like, okay, you guys have been sitting. Let's just, you just need to get up just to kind of get the energy moving again.
Yeah. Because
if you just stay stagnant, it can really just drag you down.
Well, and it materializes, right? When we're not moving our bodies in a certain way, it starts to actually hang on to old energy and hang on to old food and like prepare for this fight or flight mode to where it can protect us if we need to essentially like run from a tiger at any moment. Our bodies are preparing to do that when we're not moving them every day and like giving them that, you know, like the Tin Man in Wizard of Oz. When like the grease on his limbs, you know.
Yeah.
Moving what needs to process through him.
Right. I was watching this, there was this documentary on PBS, and it was about a healer, and she helps, it looked like mostly older people with like body pain. She mm-hmm. helps them heal their body pain, but she helps them through movement. And she was saying that like the worst thing you could do is if you have, let's say like back pain, is just to like lay in bed all day and not move. Like you need Absolutely. To actually move to heal the pain.
Yeah. And it's, and it's an emotional mental processing tool as well. It's not just for the physical body. It's mm-hmm. to actually keep our mental health healthy and the emotions. You know, some of my clients, they express that when they actually do these movements that feel good for them, it makes them cry or it brings up old anger they didn't realize they had. And it really helps them process it in a much healthier way than if we were to eat the Snickers bar, to have the martini. And so that's been really powerful to witness emotions and mental health be affected too.
Oh yeah, because even if you work with like energy healers, I studied energy healing, and just for when you have a healer working on you and just the movement of the energy can, you just, I've started crying just out of nowhere. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's something about all that, as you mentioned earlier, the energy you're just holding on to in your body, which is, it could be even tied to like past life stuff, a lot of people believe, or but yeah. it's just there. And once you release it, it's just
yeah, right. It feels so good.
Yes. Yes, for it sure. Feels, yeah.
And sometimes we don't even know we need it. That's the crazy part.
Yeah.
We can't even feel that we need it.
Because you're not aware that you're holding on to it.
Right.
Because we're just so used to holding on to it. We don't even know we're holding on to it, right?
Yeah.
Inner child work. That's a big one. Inner child work. Yeah. Tell us about that.
So this part of my coaching came from a lot of work I did on myself and with healers, with my inner child. And just realizing that I had this story created that I had a beautiful childhood and it was perfect childhood. So I couldn't relate any of my issues now to that. Mm. But then when you go deeper into it, you're like, oh, I remember this one time someone told me to be quiet when I was expressing my voice. So I won't express my voice anymore. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's all these little things that start to add up. And as adults, it's like we get this new permission to go back to that version of ourselves and nurture them and love them in a way that we needed then. Mm. And by reparenting and like re-nurturing our past selves, we start to heal and we start to respect that child for everything they did and also respect ourselves more for how far we've come from those experiences. So we do a lot of like creative exercises, you know, some doodling and coloring or getting silly within ourselves, hula hoops, yeah. you name it. I mean, it's like really tapping into that childlike play.
Yeah. I think I first learned about like child inner work and I read Louise Hayes's book, You Can mm-hmm. Heal Your Life. And yeah, because a lot of our issues stem from childhood and it's usually these pivotal moments in our childhood. And one thing that really helped me, because my parents separated when I was 11 and then they divorced when I was 17, but that separation at age 11 was huge. Yeah. Like it was at that age, I think that I cultivated the belief that I'm not important, that men will leave.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so once I really got in tune with that 11-year-old child and recognized that that was her experience at that time, and those beliefs are not necessarily true, they're just beliefs that she's still holding on to, that freed me up some.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, we're helping past versions of ourselves heal while also healing our mothers and their mothers and yes. their mothers' trauma. Yes. And
yeah.
that's been such a beautiful thing for me to experience with my mom, is the deeper healing work I'm doing is affecting her without her even realizing it, but I see it. And so mm-hmm. that's been really, really cool to witness that.
Yeah. And you know what else is helpful? Just thinking of your parents, because we always blame everything on our parents, especially our mothers.
It's so easy.
Yeah. But, you know, I had to realize that, like, my parents had parents, and they were not raised in the most functional households. And so I had to kind of picture my parents as kids. Like, there was something that happened in their young childhood that cultivated their beliefs. And so now it's just kind of showing up now and as they're, you know, in their adulthood, and just kind of understanding that they're not intentionally hurting you, ignoring you, leaving you. It's just how they were raised.
Yeah, exactly. And they yeah. do the best they can with what they
yes.
have. And
yes.
Same with us. You know, I have a couple of my clients are moms right now during this time, and there's so much coming up for them with not feeling like they're doing a good enough job, because they're trying to fix things that they don't feel like they respected that their parents did.
Yeah.
And the times are so crazy that they have their kids home 24/7, and they're putting a lot of their worth into showing up as a parent. And so, you know, I just think it's really important to remember that we're all doing literally the best we can
right,
with what
yeah.
we have, and
yeah.
just showing up is enough right now.
Exactly. Yeah. We're doing the best. Yeah. And that helps too. Your parents are doing the best they could at the
Absolutely.
Time with what they had. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one is really interesting. You talk about access on your site, accessing your deepest dreams. How do you do that?
Yeah, so sometimes we'll do this with visualization, and I like to call it dreaming with beyond limits. So removing financial responsibilities, removing any responsibilities that you currently have in your life, and just what does your dream life look like? What, like, if you could create this perfect scenario, mm-hmm. what are you doing with your life? Where are you living? Who is around you? What are your rituals look like? You know, what is the average day? And getting really clear on this and understanding that there's always parts of that bigger dream that we can access now, that we can manifest now, that we can work towards with small attainable goals to get to that bigger dream and that bigger vision. And I find a lot of us throughout our childhood and adulthood have had to suppress these dreams because they're not accepted by society. They're not going to make you the big bucks. You know, they're going against standards that we have set, or whoever has set them.
Right.
And getting to create this dream and speak it out loud really is powerful, because a lot of people have never even said it out loud.
Yes. Yes. I was actually thinking about this the other day. I posted on Instagram a little journal prompt where I said, I'm going to interview my inner critic, because whenever we have like big dreams, it's always that inner voice that comes in and says, like, the things that you were listing, this is not possible. Why there's no money into this.
Yeah.
I think the biggest one is you're not going to be successful. You're going to fail, and everyone's going to laugh at you, and you're going to look stupid, mm-hmm. or you're not smart enough. You're not good enough, whatever. And why not just sit down and just ask that critic, like, why do you feel this way?
Yeah.
What happened? First of all, who are you?
And who hurt you?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Who hurt you? Who are you? Who hurt you? Why do you believe this? And that's a really powerful exercise, I have to say, because I did it last night and I said, whoa. And you know what it helps me do? It helps me to identify now that voice is not me. Like, that's just a part of me that is scared because X, Y, Z happened, and 1986, whatever. And I don't necessarily, and I don't have to subscribe to that belief.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a tool I use in my practices as well, is to treat our inner critic as a separate entity from us, to treat our physical body as a separate entity as us. And then anything like depression or anxiety or ailments that we have within us that make themselves seen are also just visitors within us, and they exist and they're just separate from us. So I like to have clients create actual relationships with all these people and all these things within them.
Yes. I was talking to her name is Bridget Dangle. I'm horrible at pronouncing people's last names, but she wrote a book about the different personas that inhabit us. And it's good to get to know them and to not silence them. I was actually talking to a marketer and she was like, a lot of people say we need to silence the inner critic. Don't silence it. Question it. Listen to it. Figure out what's happening. Because really, Caitlin, I think that they're there, or their intention is to protect you, but it has the adverse effect, because they're usually their way of protecting you is trying to scare the crap out of you.
Yeah, they're trying to protect us from trying anything that could allow us to fail or get hurt. We're never going to get rid of it. So we have to just like say, what's up? Let's be friends.
Yeah.
And we understand you.
Yeah. When I was talking to Bridget, I was telling her that I was watching a documentary, and this one healer called those different personas and voices like your board. You have a board, a member, how do you say it? A board of directors. That's it. A board of directors. And they all have something to say. They have different personalities, and but you're the head of the board. You gotta, so I love that. And this whole concept of dreaming big, is it that we don't dream big, or that we do, but we just don't tell people because we're scared of what others are going to say? Or do you feel like most people just don't do it at all?
I think it's a little of both. I think a majority of it is just, you know, thinking our dreams are too big because they don't look like how dreams should look, or how, you know, like the timeline of life. But also, you know, a lot of people don't have that support in their life where they could openly talk about dreams and feel supported and seen in that moment. Instead, everyone has an opinion, everybody has something to say. And a lot of that comes from them not trusting themselves and their dreams. And so it's this like cycle of suppressing what is really in there, what we really are put on this earth to do.
Yeah. And I do think that you do need to be careful about who you tell your dreams to. I mean, you want to tell your dreams to someone who you know is just going to be totally negative about it. And, you know, because that'll just put you in a really bad energy space and you're like, oh, forget it. So you need to know who to tell it to. But I wish that I wasn't so, I don't know if I'm, I guess we're all scared. You know, it was interesting also, someone said that a lot of times we're just scared of the success that we might have. And I thought that was interesting too, because I think that to realize a lot of our dreams, you have to kind of step into another persona. Do you know what I mean? Like if you want to be, I remember when I was a kid, I've always wanted to be a teacher, and I was acting like a teacher when I was a kid. Do you know what I mean? When I wanted to purchase a home, I started acting like a homeowner before I purchased my home. So I think that when we have these dreams of starting our own businesses, or you have a dream of becoming, I don't know, a teacher or a doctor, you have to step into that head. You have to start acting like that. And that really you're stepping into a new persona. And when you do that, sometimes you lose friends. I think that's another big one, right?
Yeah, that's a huge thing, because, you know, with fully visualizing yourself in these dream, within the dreams and what we're craving for ourselves, we're actively manifesting as soon as we do that. And sometimes it can transform who we are, and some people just can't be there for it. You know, everybody comes into our lives for a reason, for a season, and we have to see it as that. But in order to make it to our ultimate dreams and truly manifest them, we have to learn how to set up boundaries with those people, with the people that aren't there to support and lift us up any longer. Which is a huge part of self-care is to learn how to set healthy boundaries with people in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really difficult for some people.
Oh, because it's
so
hard.
Yeah. They don't want to come off as being mean or a bitchy or a jerk or, I think that when you choose to not set boundaries, you're really being very cruel to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In trying to please other people, you're being mean to yourself. And so if you treat yourself this way, other people are going to treat you that way.
Yeah.
So it's better, to set up the boundary, and then people are very clear, like, oh, this person really, they respect themselves. Let me line up and act right around them.
Well, and we let our energy leak around certain people, you know, when they take more than we're receiving. And setting up boundaries can be difficult sometimes, because sometimes the people who need them the most are not receptive to them. And it feels really, really tough to have to put up those walls with people. But we have to do it, because if we let our energy seep out, then we truly have nothing left to give anybody else in our life.
Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of people have an issue with self-care, is because they feel like if they put themselves first and take care of themselves, it comes across as being selfish. But when you don't, like you said, you don't have, your cup is empty if you're constantly attending to everyone except yourself, and you just don't have any more to give, and you're running on empty on the time. And then people get upset with you because you're not, you know, living up to their expectations, or I need this from you and I need this from you. And it's this endless cycle of craziness.
Yeah. And then that's when we start to get inflammatory diseases and stress induced weight gain and chronic headaches and acne. Like, these all are stemmed literally from letting our cups run empty.
Yeah, for sure. And this practicing mindfulness, which we're kind of already talking about, but can you talk a little bit about how you practice mindfulness and how you help your clients practice mindfulness?
Yeah, so mindfulness is kind of like the blanket theme of my teachings, because, you know, we talked about before mindful movement and mindfully approaching our food. It's a state of mind to fully bring ourselves into the present moment so that we can be there for whatever is being revealed to us, whatever we're experiencing then. And most of us are so focused on the future or still holding on to so much from the past that it's really, really difficult to get to this centered, mindful place. And, you know, there's a lot of practices to get you there, like meditation and journaling. But when you're just starting out, that can be really overwhelming. And so I like to take mindfulness as a practice towards things that we already do in our daily lives. So when you're brushing your teeth, are you there? Or is your inner critic there? Or is the ego there? Or is someone else there? Can you feel the bristles on your teeth and taste the mint? And, you know, it's tapping into these tiny moments that we have every single day to slowly become more present with ourselves, and then allows us to be more present with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we were talking about the juicing, since I've started that, it takes not a lot of time, but it can be tedious to clean a juicer.
It sucks.
Yeah. And I was talking with a doctor, I can't think of her last name, but I was talking to a psychologist recently, and we were talking about mindfulness, and I said, so now what I do is I just have to get into this place where I'm completely present as I'm cleaning the juicer and just enjoy filling the water, run from the faucet, enjoy the bubbles, just totally be there.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if I'm in my head thinking, oh, I can't stand this, I hate doing this, blah, 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 then it just becomes a chore. And then I'm not probably going to want to juice tomorrow because I'm not going to want to clean, you know? Being present is so important.
Yeah. And I've really found that, a beautiful way to really bring us back to present moment and to spread our mindfulness awareness, if you will, is to practice gratitude. And not just like, I'm grateful I have a roof, I'm grateful I have food. It's like getting really detailed with what you're grateful for. You know, I'm grateful that I can afford this juicer and be able to clean it in my own sink with running water.
Right. Yeah.
Or to be able to have access to these fruits and vegetables that many people don't in order to put into my juicer. And it's practicing this perspective of being grateful. It has really been a powerful tool for me to bring myself back to present and just like shift my perspective. Like you were saying, instead of complaining about cleaning it, being grateful that I'm able to do this, and that becomes your reality.
Right.
Not dreading it each time. You're like, wow, okay, I have clean water. I'm so grateful for this.
That, you know, and I've always struggled with like consistently practicing gratefulness. Like I remember like years ago, I would hear always about like, write down the three things that you're grateful for every day and it'll change your life. And I could never be consistent with that. Even though I have moments of it when I'm thinking, yeah, I'm grateful for this, but it's something that I just overlook. And I feel like if I did that more often, I would just be happier. Do you write down what you're grateful for?
Sometimes I really don't like to make anything feel like a to-do.
Uh-huh.
And so I truly utilize the moments where I feel like I'm stuck in my head or I feel this pressure in my chest because I'm feeling anxious about something. And then I'm like, okay, it's gratitude time. I need to put gratitude cap on and just be here for this moment. And it truly immediately shifts my entire vibration, my entire energy. So it's been a really powerful practice for me to practice gratitude.
Yeah. And in your program, well, first let's talk about the self-love. So if I'm a client and I come to you and I just don't like anything, my life is in ruins. I don't hardly have any friends. I'm upset with myself all the time. I have kids and I'm stressed out. How do you help someone come to a place of self-love who seems to be miserable?
So we base so much of our worth within things that are really, truly irrelevant. And so it's like, I, as a coach, actively guide them through simple questions to understand what it really is. What is the story they're telling themselves about themselves? And how can we rewrite portions of that story to change it? And ultimately, you know, it will look different.
Yeah.
And it's by implementing simple practices, but also most people do not have these vulnerable spaces to like openly share their truth and what is really coming up for them. And so when you open up that coaching space, I'll be in these sessions and we're talking about let's say we're talking about their relationship to why they're emotionally eating.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to tell me a story. And then at the end of the story, they'll say, I've never said that out loud before. I don't even think I've ever thought about that as an adult until now. Yeah. And so it's like, literally just creating this space to be quiet with yourself and do something for you, to sit with someone. I mean, even like what we're doing one-on-one right now, it's therapeutic to openly mm-hmm. talk about things. And so it's like self-discovery, you know, it's asking these questions. Well, you just, let me repeat what you just said to you. Is this true? You really believe this about yourself? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's strengthening our relationship with our inner critic and understanding why we don't have worthiness, why we don't have this love for ourselves when we're willing to do anything for mm-hmm. other people in our lives. But mm-hmm. when it comes to number one, mm-hmm. it's like, I'm not that important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to one of my friends and we were talking about, starting a business. She wants to have a side hustle. And so, I said, well, have you researched? And she said, yeah, I've done a little research. Then we started talking about her son, and her son is an artist. He's young. And she said that she's done so much research to help him get into, like writing or drawing for books. What do you call it? Illustrator, right? And after she tells me all that she's done for her son, she says, you know what? I just never even thought, like, I've done all this for him, but I haven't even looked into how to help myself get into my own business. And he probably doesn't even really want to be an illustrator as much as she wants him to be an illustrator. It's just so funny how we just kind of ignore what we would. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, we ignore it. We ignore what we truly need because we've been structured to help everybody else first.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that need, I wonder if do we want to help everyone first because we truly care about helping them or care about them, or do we care more about their perception of them if we don't help them?
I think it's partially instinctual, like primal, to help others, but then also, like you said, we're suppressing stuff we don't want to deal with that we know we probably will have to deal with if we do start to nurture ourselves. And that fear that if we don't show up for others, that we're not as good as everyone else, or our self-worth isn't there if we're not helping others, to a point of breaking ourselves. You know, with corporate America, they really challenge you to just push yourself beyond what you're capable of, because that's what everybody else around you is doing. Mm. And so in order to feel like you belong there, you're like, okay, I guess I have to work the 60-hour weeks and skip lunch and sleep under my desk and do all the crazy things. And that's just not what it's about. No one gains anything from that type of experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that a lot of times, yeah, we help people instinctually. If you see someone who really needs help, your instinct is to help. And then a lot of times we do it because, and I just had the thought and it skipped me. See, this is why I take notes, Caitlin, because I'm always forgetting my thought.
I'm a notes too.
Yeah. I guess it will come back to me hopefully, but let me just talk about something else then. Can we talk a little bit about...
I wanted to add that as humans, I know that this analogy is overused, but the fact that we have to be reminded every time we're on a flight to put our mask on before helping
someone else, that
shouldn't even have to be a warning. That should be what we do first, but we're just not built like that.
Right. Yeah. It's so true. I remember, do you know who Susie Orman is? She's like a financial guru. She used to do those PBS specials. I was kind of a nerd when I was in high school. She PBS specials.
I love that.
Yeah. But she would talk about how, especially parents, but everyone, we look out for other people. Like we're willing, if we had a family member asked to borrow money, we'd probably give them the money if we felt that they really needed it, even though we might be in financial straits ourselves and it might not be in our best interest. Right. I think her point was that we make a lot of financial decisions without really considering, without taking care of ourselves financially first. And right. So she used that analogy of being on the plane and how you have to first give oxygen to yourself before you take care of your child.
Right.
And so that's just really hard for people to do. And I still think, I think it has to do with just wanting people's approval. You know, I think it is instinctual to help, but I think we also want people we want people's attention and we want their approval. And if we don't help them, they're going to disapprove of us. And if they disapprove of us, that brings up all the beliefs, which is kind of what I want to talk about now, that we've been holding about, you're not worthy. You're not good enough. Nobody cares about you. And, you know, so these core beliefs, where do these core beliefs come from? Are they things that pick up in our childhood?
It's a combination. It's a combination of moments from our childhood, like formative moments, and then societal moments,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, privileged moments. What type of life were you born into? There's so much of it that repress everything. We just keep pushing everything down the more we're developing. And that's where we lose sight of who we are here to be, who our soul truly is. And I like to imagine these core beliefs as like an invisible thread. So, you know, you let's say you and your sister both created artistic masterpieces when you were younger, but your parents loved hers and praised hers. You're creating an invisible thread from that moment to remember that your art's not as good as other people's. Mm-hmm. And that stays, like, hangs on to you like a balloon. And then, you know, a boy has a crush on your friend and not you. And then you develop this belief that you're not pretty enough or you're not thin enough.
Right.
And we start all these little moments, comments people make towards us, opinions from our parents, religious upbringing, so much goes into it. And we don't really live in a world where we're taught to question it, where we're taught to relive it, to go into it, and to start removing the threads, remembering, my sister could paint then, she can't paint now.
Snip that cord,
you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's going back into the moments and just recognizing that they even still are there. They're not on the surface, but they do exist in here.
Yeah. You know, I heard someone recently say that a lot of people think they don't have what they want in your life, in their lives, but everyone has exactly what they want right now in their lives. And I think what they meant is that a lot of what we have manifested or are manifesting is really based on the beliefs that we hold. And so if I want to be an entrepreneur and I'm not an entrepreneur, it's because I'm probably scared of what that would mean or the success I would have to step into or what it would take. And so I choose not to take the actions that I need to take in order to do that. So I am where I really want to be. I want to be in this safe space where I don't have to do anything to become that, even though I'm telling myself, but I really want that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the secret of truly manifesting something is to say, I want to be an entrepreneur, but also feel it and believe it.
Yeah.
And you can't say, I want to be an entrepreneur, but this, I'm scared of this, because then you're attracting more of what you're scared of.
Yeah.
But when you step into it and you're like, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm going to do this, this is what my life is going to look like, this is what I believe is coming into my life, and you feel it, you put emotion towards it, that's when you start to literally open yourself up to receive all the things we didn't think we could have.
Yes. And, you know, a lot of life, if not all of life, is really about being of service to people. Mm-hmm. And it's, you can't be of service to people if you're living in this space of fear, if you're ignoring your own needs physically and emotionally, right? Like you, right. These are all, if you have the wrong core beliefs, or you have, if you have core beliefs that are holding you back. Mm-hmm. And so it's just so imperative that we step into our power and we get the help that we need from people like holistic wellness coaches, or we see a therapist, or we go to the doctor for having, because these are all tools to help us be the best versions of ourselves so that we can go out and be of service to people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is all self-care. We have this belief that self-care is just bubble baths and face masks, but
right, yeah.
You know, it's so physical. I mean, it's true, right? You're like, okay, I'm having a glass of wine and the bubble bath and a face mask. Like, that's self-care. And that is self-care. But that's more of like the physical self-care, because there's also emotional and mental and social and spiritual, professional. Like, there's so many segments of it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my coaching practice is centered around where are you on this wheel of life, if you were to rate yourself, you know, are you happy in your spiritual portion of your life? Are you happy in your emotions? What about your relationships, your career? And so we really work in each of these areas and take the focus away from food and pushing our bodies, and understanding that this unbalance that's happening within all the other areas is what's making us sick. That's where the work needs to happen, so that we can start to feel better and lighter. And there's tons of self-care options within each of those segments. And so it's really critical that we like broaden our viewpoint of what self-care can look like.
Yes. Yeah. It is, as you say, more than bubble baths and face masks. Yeah, it is. And I think that especially as we move through this pandemic, a lot of people are understanding the value of therapy and just really kind of being aware of your mental health. That actually, over the years, I've noticed mental health has become something that we're talking about way more than we were 10 or 20 years ago.
Yes.
So I'm glad to see that we're progressing in that sense. We're like, mental health is an issue that people, it's on people's radar, and we're not scared to talk about it. Yes. But there's so much more that we can learn about self-care, and it's just great that you're out there doing what you're doing. And I can't believe that we are almost out of time here.
Oh my God.
Yes, we are. I want to
give could talk you to you all day.
I know. I always say, I'm like, gosh, I could just keep talking to you for hours and hours. Yeah. So why don't you tell us where we can find you, Caitlin?
So I am most active on my Instagram account, which is living.peachfully. Mm-hmm. And also at my website, www.livingpeachfully.com, I'm currently offering a discount on my one-on-one coaching, because, you know, I've been working with a lot of women in the past couple months who have lost their jobs, who have been furloughed, who are homeschooling, who are really just suffering in this financial deficit right now.
Yeah.
And I, like you said before, this therapy, this coaching is critical for our mental health. Yeah. And so I'm offering 50-minute coaching sessions for $40. And I also do group coaching programs every other month, mostly for women, to kind of adapt mindfulness skills into their daily life. It's my favorite work so far. It's really powerful to work with a group and just watch women lift each other up. It's just so cool to experience that. That's where you can find me.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Isn't Caitlin insightful? I hope that this conversation was inspiring, because it's important that you take care of yourself mentally, physically, and emotionally. Because if you're feeling stressed out, or if you're not feeling good about yourself, you're not feeling good in your skin, it's kind of hard to create when you're under that type of energy. So to help free up that energy, to help release your creativity, it's very important that we do take the time to self-care. And that just makes us more courageous in our art. So check out Caitlin's website, her social media, and give her a call if you need some coaching. Join me next week for another fabulous conversation with another fabulous guest. In the meantime, check out my website, zazo.com, this Sunday for my big takeaways with Caitlin Peach. You can follow me on social media at Motivation to Write. That's Instagram and Facebook. At Twitter is at Ebony Haywood. And you can sign up for my weekly newsletter at zazo.com. Thanks so much for joining me, for taking the time out of your schedule. And I will see you next time. Bye-bye.